series of lectures on Drik Drishya Viveka. I offer my Ananta Koti Sashtanga Namaskarams at the lotus feet of the Jagadgurus, Sri Sri Bharati Tirtha Mahasannidhanam, Sri Vidushekara Bharati Sannidhanam, Sri Paramacharya of Kanchi, Swami Paramarthananda, Swami Omkarananda, and several other Swamijis and scholars based on whose lectures and books I draw the material content of these lectures. People used to ask me what kind of textbook they can have. The book that I have used reasonably exhaustively is one from Swami Nikhilananda of Sri Ramakrishna Ashrama, Mysore. And this book was published in 1931, at that time for rupees one. Drik Drishya Viveka is an inquiry into the distinction of the seer, the one who sees. The seer, in Sanskrit, he is called Drig. And the seen, the object that is seen, that's called Drishya. So it's an inquiry of utmost importance for the understanding of the ultimate Vedantic philosophy. It is considered as a Prakarana Grantha. Prakarana means a treatise of Vedanta. And we all know that there are three primary source books of Vedanta, giving the knowledge of our spiritual nature, Atma Jnanam. And those three primary source books are known as Prasthana Traya. Prasthana means method. Prasthana Traya means three methods of revealing the nature of Atma. And the first one is called the Shruti Prasthanam. Actually, I mentioned all these in our Brahma Sutra lectures also. I'm just reiterating here. Shruti Prasthanam. Shruti means Vedas, especially the final part of the Vedas, namely the Vedanta portion, otherwise also known as the Upanishadic portion. That is Shruti Prasthanam. Vedanta Prasthanam, Shruti Prasthanam, Upanishad Prasthanam, they are all synonymous. And the second one is the Bhagavad Gita, which is called the Smriti Prasthanam, and it is the most popular one because it presents the teaching in a much simpler manner. All the information given in the Shruti is presented in the Smriti Grantha, namely Bhagavad Gita. And it also highlights the sadhanas of Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Upasana Yoga, all that thing it highlights. So Bhagavad Gita, that is part of Mahabharata, comes under the Smriti category. Smriti means any spiritual literature whose contents are borrowed from Shruti, the Vedas. Smriti does not have an original teaching of its own, but it has borrowed the teaching from the Vedas and presents it in a different manner. And the third prasthana is called the Nyaya Prasthana in the form of Brahma Sutras, and it is called so because the support of reasoning is given. Nyaya is logic. Support of reasoning is given to the Vedantic teaching. So Shruti and Smriti are primarily based on the revelations of the rishis, whereas the Nyaya Prasthanam is logically defending the teaching. We should understand the difference from all three. And of these three, the Shruti Prasthanam, we do not know the author because the Vedas have been coming down through the Guru Parampara, Guru Shishya Parampara, and we do not know who the original author is, and therefore we call it Apaurusheya Pramana, a source of knowledge that has superhuman origin. Otherwise, it is said that it has been given by Lord himself. And Nyaya Prasthana, the Brahma Sutras, have been authored by Vyasacharya, and we are indebted to Veda Vyasa. And on Guru Purnima day, we offer worship to Veda Vyasa. In fact, Guru Purnima is also called Vyasa Purnima. Thus, these are the three prasthanams. They are the foundation text. But many people may not have access to these three original texts, which are voluminous. People may not be able to study them completely. Therefore, to help such people, the acharyas condensed the Prasthana Trayam and wrote simpler and smaller textbooks. Thus, we have got numerous Vedantic texts which are simplified and relatively smaller of smaller versions, we can say, of the Prasthanatraya. And all these manuals are called Vedanta Prakarana, Prakaranani, Vedanta text treatises. Prakarana means a treatise or a simplified version. So these Prakarana Granthas can be also classified into two types. One group of Prakarana Granthas, they present all aspects of Vedantic teaching, but in a simple form. For example, Tattva Bodha itself. We have seen Tattva Bodha long ago. It presents all aspects of the teaching. By all aspects, what do we mean? We essentially mean the six aspects of teaching, Prasthanatrayam, six aspects of Prasthanatrayam. Namely, it talks about the Jiva, Jiva the individual. It talks about the Jagat, the world. It talks about Ishvara, the Lord. It talks about Bandha, the bondage, including the cause of bondage also. And it also talks about Moksha, the liberation. And finally, it talks about the sadhanas, the means by which Jiva can travel from bondage to liberation. So these are the six aspects. Viveka Chudamani, Vedanta Sara, Sarva Vedanta Siddhanta Sara Sangraha. There are some examples of Prakaranas that give an overview of the totality of Vedanta. We have seen all this. And there is another, actually Vedanta Sara, I have not separately talked. Maybe at some time I will. There is another type of Prakarana Grantha, which does not deal with all aspects of Vedanta, but highlight a particular aspect of the teaching through thoroughly and comprehensively though. Even though it is going to talk about a particular aspect of the teaching, it will talk about it thoroughly and comprehensively. And some Prakarana Granthas will concentrate on the Jiva study only, without talking much about Ishvara or creation, any of those. For example, there is a Grantha called Vakya Vritti. Jiva, Ishvara, and other topics are not highlighted there at all. But only the Mahavakya Vichara, which is the sadhana, that is highlighted in that particular Grantha. It is also a Prakarana of a second type. And even in the text, other sadhanas like Karma Yoga, Upasana Yoga, they were not talked about. Only the Mahavakya analysis, Tattvamasi, Aham Brahmasmi, those kind of Mahavakya analysis alone, they were elaborated in 53 verses in Vakya Vritti. Thus, the second group of Prakarana Granthas, they highlight any one of the six aspects of the Vedantic teaching. So now we have got both types. And both these two types of Prakarana Granthas, both are very important. In the beginning stages, one should have an overview of the entire teaching. And when receiving this overview, one gets several doubts regarding some aspects of the teaching. And then the second group of Prakarana Granthas will clarify those doubts. So in our tradition, both types of Prakarana Granthas are present, highlighted, and learned. And we learned Tattva Bodha, Viveka Chudamani, Sarva Vedanta Siddhanta Sangraha, and several others that come under the first type. We have seen the entire Prasthanatrayam also. We saw Bhagavad Gita entirely, the Dashopanishads, and also Brahma Sutras. So we may have more doubts now. And therefore, we are now going to see another text of the second type so that we can try to clarify the doubts we might have already got. Doubts are expected. They should be there if we have studied, even gone through them. And that text we are going to take now is Drik Drishya Vivekaha, another Prakarana Grantha that highlights Jiva Vichara, the analysis, inquiry of the individual. Ishvara and creations are not talked about much here at all. Jiva, his or her bondage, liberation, and the sadhanas, they are all talked about here. Jiva, Bandha, Moksha, and Sadhana are highlighted in Drik Drishya Viveka. That is the subject matter. It is relatively a smaller Prakarana Grantha with only 46 verses, slokas. And the author of this text is not clearly known. And according to some people, Adi Shankaracharya himself is the author. And some others say that Vidyaranya is the author. And some people say Vidyaranya's guru, Bharati Tirtha, is the author. And a majority of the people say that this text was written by Bharati Tirtha, who was also one of the Shankaracharyas of the Sringeri Matha, about 600 or 700 years ago in the 14th century. He was the guru of Vidyaranya also. So when one studies the style of this text, it is seen that the author is not Adi Shankaracharya, but that the author is either Vidyaranya or Bharati Tirtha. These two authors have very close writing styles. In fact, it is claimed that Panchadashi, that text also is something which I plan to do sometime later, Panchadashi was written by Vidyaranya and Bharati Tirtha together. So this tale found in Panchadashi is found in Drigdrishya Viveka also. So in the title of this text, Drigdrishya Viveka, Viveka means discrimination, referring to resolving confusions to give clarity in understanding and in thinking. Clear knowledge is called Viveka. And the topic is the discrimination between Drik, the observer, the seer, the experiencer, maybe the illuminator, or the subject. So Drik means subject. And Drishyam means the observed, the experienced, the seen, the illumined, or an object. So we are talking about subject-object discrimination. And why should we do this discrimination or the sorting out? Sorting out is required when there is a mixing up. That mixing up is called Viveka, otherwise called Moha, Delusion, Adhyasa, Superimposition. So because there is non-discrimination or mixing up, we have to sort out. And when we have confusion at different levels, actually life is full of confusion, then why should we sort about only particularly this specific confusion? For that, Bharati Tirtha says, other confusions will not seriously affect our life, whereas this one confusion we cannot afford to have, because this confusion is the cause of all our problems, that is samsara. We have to resolve this confusion to attain moksha. Therefore, Drigdrishya Vivekaha becomes very important. So with this background, now let us enter into the text. Drigdrishya Viveka, it is also called Vakya Sudha, Bharati Tirtha Swamina Virajitaha. He is supposed to be the author. Now let us read the first shloka. Rupam Drishyam Lochanam Drike Tadrishyam Triktu Manasam Drishya Divrittaya Sakshi Drigevanatu Drishyate. As we said, the author is going to focus on Jiva Vichara, inquiry into the individual, inquiry of Jiva. And the author begins the text with an analysis of the individual in this shloka. What are the various constituents or components of the individual, or the various layers of the human personality? We have done that elaborately in Tattva Bodha, Viveka Chudamani, and all those texts also. From one angle, these texts talk about Sharira Trayam, the three bodies, Thula Shariram, Sukshma Shariram, Karana Shariram, all those, and Atma. And from another angle, they talk about Pancha Koshas, Annamaya Kosha, Pranamaya Kosha, Manomaya Kosha, Vijnanamaya Kosha, Anandamaya Kosha, and Atma. So this is all either Sharira Trayam or Kosha Panchaka. Here the author is talking about the body, the deha, the sense organs, indriyani, the mind, manaha, or the buddhi, and the atma. That is the subject matter. And we all know of these four components, three are made up of five elements. Physical body is made up of five elements. That is, these elements are themselves inert, starting from space, air, fire, water, and earth. And the sense organs are also made up of the five elements, matter also, which are inert. And the mind is also made up of matter only. All are inert material. And since they all are material products, they are inert by themselves. Just as the desk, the carpet, and the chair, they are all inert in nature. The body, sense, mind complex. Body, sense, mind complex. Sense means sense organs. Mind complex. is also inert in nature. But even though the body sense mind complex is inert, it behaves as though it is sentient. It behaves as though, careful, as though it is sentient. The body is able to sense the external stimuli like heat, cold. When it is hot, you want to turn on the air conditioner. When it is cold, you want to put the heater. Which problem a desk does not have? A desk or a chair or a bed does not have those problems. They are also inert. The sense organs are also sentient because they are able to sense the touch, the form, the smell, or the sound. So the sense organs are also sentient. And the mind also is sentient, capable of sensing or having an emotion. So if the inert can function as though sentient, if the inert can function as though sentient, they must be borrowing consciousness from somewhere else. If the inert can function as though sentient, they must be borrowing consciousness from somewhere else. For example, the fan does not have the capacity to rotate by itself, but it rotates borrowing the moving power from some other principle. And that principle is not physically seen. And therefore, it must be an invisible principle, which is called electricity. In the same way, the functioning sentient body, sense organs, and the mind must be blessed by some other principle. And that principle is invisible because it is not perceived, and it must be lending sentiency to the body. Body and other things. For example, in Keno Upanishad, we have seen all these shlokas earlier. The student asked the question in the very first shloka. Kene shitam patati preshitam manaha. Kena pranaha pratama praiti yuktaha. Kene shitam vacham imam vadanti. Chakshu shrotram kavu devo yunakti. First shloka. Kene shitam patati preshitam manaha. Built by whom does the mind fall? An object as though, or objects the mind falls. How it is forced? Kena shitam patati. Patati means falling. Preshitam manaha. Kena pranaha pratamaha praiti yuktaha. Directed by whom does this prana function? Kene shitam vacham imam vadanti. Willed by whom do people utter their speech? Chakshuhu shrotram kavu devo yunakti. Which effulgent principle indeed directs the eyes, ears, and all that? Upanishads are the basis for Bharati Dita to write the verses of this text. That invisible lending principle is called Atma, the consciousness principle. The author will call it Sakshi Archit. It is this Atma that is lending consciousness to all these three components of the body, sense, mind, complex. And how does it lend? It can be either by direct lending or indirect lending. The direct lending is a series of exchanges involving one or two or many intermediaries. In the case of Atma, lending consciousness to the mind, to the sense organs, and to the body, it is lending all these things. Consciousness, if the Atma is lending them, how does it happen? The author says that is not directly happening, but it is in the form of gradual transference, stage by stage. Atma lends consciousness to the mind directly. Of these three, Atma lends consciousness to the mind directly. It never lends consciousness directly to the sense organs. Thus, Atma becomes the illuminator and the mind becomes the illumined. We have to understand all this, the terminologies clearly. Atma becomes the illuminator. It lends sentience to consciousness to the mind, and the mind becomes the illumined. And when the mind becomes illumined or sentient, the mind gets the capacity to lend consciousness to the sense organs. So the mind gives consciousness to the five sense organs, and thus the mind becomes the illuminator and the sense organs become the illumined. And the sense organs, they lend consciousness to the body, to the gross body, and thus the sense organs become the illuminator and the body becomes the illumined. and through the body, the external world gets illumined. These are the steps. So the author says that the Atma is Drik, the mind is Drishyam. Drik means illuminator, Drishyam means illuminate object, subject object. The mind is Drik and sense organs are Drishyam. And the sense organs become Drik and the body and the world, they become Drishyam. So in the form of gradual flow, Atma illumines the whole world. Atma to mind, mind to sense organs to the body and the external world. That is why when the intermediaries in the flow are absent, like when the mind and sense organs are absent, Atma does not illumine the external world because Atma cannot directly experience the external world. Why? Atma cannot directly illumine the world. If you take the intermediaries, every intermediary has a twofold status. On a full moon night, for example, Purnami day, the sun illumines the moon. The sun is the illuminator and the moon is illumined. And even as the moon becomes illumined, it gets the status of an illuminator and it is capable of illumining the earth. If I ask whether the moon is the illuminator or the illumined, what will be the answer? It is both. From the standpoint of the sun, moon is illumined. From the standpoint of the earth, the moon is the illuminator. And how to differentiate between the illuminator sun and the illuminator moon? The sun is an illuminator without becoming an illumined anytime. It is a non-illumined illuminator. The sun is an absolute illuminator. For example, this one. The moon is not an absolute illuminator because it is an illumined illuminator. It is called a relative illuminator. We can call it relative illuminator here. So the author says that Atma is the absolute Drik because it is a self-effulgent, illuminator and never illumined by anything. Whereas the mind and sense organs are relative illuminators. Thus, every individual is a mixture of absolute and relative Drik. Every individual is a mixture of the absolute illuminator that is called the Sakshi Atma and the relative illuminators, mind and the sense organs. This is the first topic of Drik Drishya Viveka. So in the first five shlokas or verses, the author presents this topic of how the individual is a mixture of the absolute illuminator called the Sakshi and the relative illuminator called the mind and the sense organs. He will call the relative illuminator as Ahankara later. Right now, it is good we take this. For now, we keep this name, relative illuminator. For the mind sense complex, this is the relative illuminator, we will give the name now. This is the topic in the first five shlokas. Then the author will say, what is our problem? What is samsara? What is its cause? They all will be pointed out that mixing up of the absolute and relative illuminators is samsara. Very simple. And therefore, sorting them out, sorting these two, that needs to be done. If you want to get out of samsara. Now let us look at the sloka. Rupam drishyam lochanam drik. Rupam, the forms and the colors. The forms and colors of the external world, including the physical body, are experienced. They are objects of experience or seen objects. And the eye, lochanam, eye is their experiencer, drik, or the seer, object, subject. So rupam, drishyam, they are all the objects, and eye is the experiencer, the seer. Tadrishyam, the eyes themselves are experienced because the conditions of the eye are known. When eyes themselves become drishyam, who is the experiencer of the eyes? Driktu manasam. The mind is the seer and the eyes are the seeing. How? Even when the eyes are closed, the mind is capable of visualizing and imagining things. In fact, the mind knows that the eyes are closed also, but still it can visualize things. The eyes enjoy twofold status, seer and seen. And the eyes are relative seers. The mind is also not the absolute seer. So, di vrittayaha, di means buddhi, mental functions like thinking, doubting, worrying. They are all entertained in the form of thoughts, vrittayaha, thoughts, and are objects of experience. So the very condition of the mind is very intimately experienced by us, by all these various things, like dukkham, sukham, all that thing, happiness, all that mental functions. We give expression to all our thoughts. We cannot do that if you do not experience them. And the thoughts are never inferred. Worry, knowledge, the understanding and non-understanding functions, they are all of the mind are directly experienced. If the mind is the drishyam, what is the drik then? Sakshi is the drik. Atma, sakshi is atma, witness is the drik, is the seer. If mind is the seen object. So the original consciousness, which is called the witness, sakshi chaitanyam, is the drik, the illuminator and observer. So it is a non-observable observer, non-seeable seer, non-experienceable experiencer, non-objectifiable subject, not object, non-objectifiable subject. It is the absolute observer. You can never attempt to experience the sakshi. Nobody should say, oh, I am going to get the sakshi experience, atma anubhava. You can never attempt to objectify the sakshi. This is the samkshepa shloka or pratignya shloka of drik drishya viveka. It gives the entire shloka, the subject, the topic in one shloka, in a compact shloka. So to summarize what we said so far, in this verse, the author has introduced three observers and three illuminators. Three observers or three illuminators. Sense organs, mind, sakshi. One and two, sense organs and mind are relative illuminators. And third, the sakshi is absolute illuminator. So two relative drik and the one absolute drik are the components of the individual. What is the components of the individual? Two relative driks, seers, and one absolute seer are the components of the individual. The author feels that this requires further clarification. Even though we have summarized it fairly quickly, the author knows we all need a lot of more explanation. So he clarification. So the following four shlokas are the author's commentary on his own first shloka. So each part of the first verse will be now elaborated. Now we will go to verse number 2. Nila pita stula sukshma krasva krasva dirghadi bedataha nana vidani rupani paschelochanam ekadha. So in the first shloka, the author introduced the three illuminators or observers, sense organs, mind, and the sakshi. And of the three, the author is clarifying the first one here in shloka number 2 that we just read. It was said in the first shloka that the form is seen and the eyes are the seers. So the first quarter of the previous verse is explained here. The first shloka that we read earlier, number 1 shloka. So the first quarter of that shloka is explained here. Rupam drishyam, that portion. Form is seen and the eyes are the seers. The author says, observed objects, those objects which are observed are many. And observing eye is only one. To see green color, one uses the same eye that is used to see the red color also. This shows there is plurality in the drishyam. Drishya means the objects that are seen. The drishyam and drik, this name difference we should know clearly. Plurality in the drishyam, the objects that are seen. There is non-duality in drik, the seer, namely the eye. So I am the only observer person in the room for me. And I am observing so many things. I, the observer, am one, and the observed are many and varied also. Now, if let us look at the words. Nila, pita, stula, sukshma, krasva, dirghadi, bedataha. Nila, the colors, the blue color, the yellow color, big objects, small object, short object, long object, they are all pluralities and varieties of the observed. They can be any of these. And in each plurality itself, there is variety. There is plurality in colors, plurality in forms. Nana vidhani rupani, second line. Nana vidhani rupani pasyet lochanam ekada. But the eye is only one, lochanam ekada, only one. In the manifold manner, the forms and colors are many and varied. Nana vidhani rupani, whereas remaining single, the eyes see the plurality. This discussion will be extended, and the consequence of this discussion will be evident when we come to consciousness, Atma, Sakshi. It will be said that in consciousness, there is no variety, no plurality, no bigness, no smallness. All those things don't exist. And the author is laying the foundation for that conclusion here in this shloka. And the first verse, the first relative seer is the sense organs. And from that standpoint, the external world is the object. From the sense organs, the external world is the object. But sense organs are both seer and the seen, as we said earlier, and therefore they are relative seers. The mind is both the seer and seen, and therefore it is a relative seer. Atma is ever the seer and never the seen, and therefore it is the absolute seer. Thus, two relative seers, that is sense organs and mind, plus one absolute seer, that is the Atma, that is the individual's composition. We are all made up of only these three. This is how the text is started, with a summarizing verse, verse number one. So the first verse is a summarizing verse, which the author himself explains in the later verses, as I mentioned earlier. So all the three seers are introduced in verse one. First seer is explained in verse two. The second seer is explained in verse 3. The third and absolute seer will be explained in verse 4. So far we have seen the first and the second verses. And in the second verse, the author said how every sense organ is the seer and every relevant sense object is the seen. The word relevant is used because with respect to the eye, the object is what? Only forms and colors. With respect to the ear, it is only sound. So sound, touch, forms, that is colors and all that, taste and smell are the sense objects. Then the author made a note that the forms and colors are many and varied, whereas the eye is one and the same that we just read. The size of the sense objects are varied, but the eye is only one and the same. So without undergoing any change, remaining the same, the eye illumines all the varied sense objects. The forms, dimensions, and colors of the sense objects are many and varied, but the eye, remaining the same and single, ekada, observes all of them. Therefore, drishyam is many and drik is only one. This has to be noted specifically because when we come to the absolute seer later, namely Atma, it can be said that the absolute seer is Advaitam. That is where the entire discussion is leading us into. Non-dual consciousness is the absolute seer. Then only we can establish that the absolute seer is not limited by time and space. Then only we can establish that absolute seer is not limited by time and space. The infinitude of the absolute seer is established by establishing non-duality. I hope you understand the development of this entire subject. Infinitude of the absolute seer, namely Atma, is established by establishing non-duality. There is no Dvaitam at all. Only when you have Dvaitam, we have limitation. By understanding of non-duality, one understands infinitude. That is the argument. Now let us go to the seer number two. Who is that? The mind. Adhyam 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 adhy चेत् सङ्कल्पयेन्मनः श्रोत्रः त्वघादिं योज्यतामिदम्। Andaha means a person who is blind. So here, seer number two, the mind is explained here. When the mind becomes the seer, the sense organs are the seeing. When the mind becomes seer, sense organs are seen. Sense organs are seen by virtue of their perceptual power in three different levels. Sense organs, they perceive power in three different levels. Total perception is one. That is, the sense organs are so sharp, 20-20 vision, whatever it is. So sense organs are so sharp, sharp enough to totally and clearly perceive the object. That is, total perception, perception is one. And total non-perception is the second. That is, sense organs do not function at all. In the case of a blind person, eyes are totally non-functional. So total perception and total non-perception are the two extremes. And between these two extremes, there is a third condition, that is partial perception and partial non-perception. Dullness of the eyes is an intermediary condition. There are three conditions now: full function, full non-function, and partial function, that are possible for every sense organ. And all these conditions are known to us. Andhyam, andhyam, patutveshu, netra dharmeshu, chaikada. These three conditions in the case of the eye are mentioned in this shloka, in the first line. Total blindness and partial function of the eyes, that is vague vision and sharp and clear vision. These are the things. Netra dharmeshu cha ekada, by the functioning of the eye. So all these conditions are experienced by us. The mind experiences or illumines these three conditions of the eye, and the mind is the seer number two. So manaha ekada sankalpayet. Mind cognizes as a unity all of that. Ekada. Shrotra tvak adishu yojyatam idam. This applies to this ear, the shrotra, tvak, the skin, all those other organs. Adishu means other organs also, sense organs. So even though conditions are many and varied, mind doesn't undergo any change. Blindness of the eye does not make the mind non-functional. And the dull vision does not make the mind non-functional. These conditions are variable with respect to sense organs, but they do not belong to the mind. Mind is the seer, understand now in this discussion. The mind remains the same, and it is not affected by the pluralities and the varieties of the sense organs. When act of perception is changed from eye to ear, a different mind is not required. The same mind only does the same job. Here again, the principle of the observed being many, but the observer, manaha, is only one, that applies. Therefore, sankalpayen manaha, shrotra tvag adishu adav yojetam idam. This principle can be extended to other four sense organs also, like the ear, skin, and other things. Thus, the seer number two, the mind, that was introduced in the first verse has been explained in the third verse. Now we have to know what is remaining is the absolute seer, is to be the remaining thing that is to be explained, which author does it in the next shloka, verse number 4. Kama sankalpa sandehau shraddha shradde dhrithitare krihi dhihi bihi ityeva madhine pasayatye kadachitihi. Kamaha sankalpa, sandeha, shraddha, ashraddha, dhriti, and all that, ithare. Krihi, dihi, bihi, ityevam, adhine, vasaya, tyekada, chitihi. So in the previous verse, the mind was introduced as seer number two. So first, second shloka introduced the sense organs, seer one. Mind, seer two. Now both are relative seers. Here it says that the mind itself is seen, experienced, are clearly known. The mind goes through different emotional conditions: happiness, sorrow, jealousy, compassion, fear, all that. In addition, there are several cognition conditions also of the mind, like ignorance, knowledge, partial ignorance, partial knowledge, doubt. They are also there for the mind. So these various conditions of the mind, they are all experienced. And what is the proof that they are experienced? If they are not experienced, we will never talk about them. Simple. So I always say I have some doubts. I say I understand clearly. So if they are not experienced, we will never talk about them. So even though we experience these varied conditions and they are known to us, actually, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad enumerates them in the first chapter, the fifth Brahmana, or the first chapter. Kama sankalpa vichikitsam shraddha shraddha adhriti adhriti adhritihim krihi drihi bihim ityetat sarvam mana eva concludes. Mind is nothing but different vrittis, thoughts. Vrittis mean thoughts put together. And few examples are given here, such as kama vritti, kamaha, sankalpa vritti. Sankalpa vritti, actually Sankara calls it as samanya jnana. And vichikitsa. Vichikitsa means doubt, samshaya. Shraddha and ashraddha, belief or faith and disbelief, lack of faith. Dhritihi and adhritihi, mental courage, dhriti. And adhriti means mental confidence. A mental courage is dhriti and mental confidence, and adhriti is diffidence. Diffidence. So hrihi, hrihi means shame, shyness, modesty. And dhihi, visesha jnana, buddhi. Bihi, bihi means fear. So the author knows from the enumeration, and he author has borrowed this from Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. And he lists them all here in this shloka. So desire, making plans to implement a desire, doubt as to whether the plan will be successful or not, faith in God, Guru, scriptures, lack of faith, willpower is the dhriti and all that thing we mentioned. Willpower or steadfastness, diffidence, modesty, knowledge, fear, all those things. Chittihi means consciousness here. Kamaha refers to desire. Sankalpa sandeho means firmness and doubt. Shraddha ashraddha, faith and want of faith. Dhriti itare, steadiness and non-steadiness. Itare means the one opposite of dhriti. And hrihi dihi bihi, modesty, understanding and fear. Ityevam adhin. And such others, ekada, they are unified. Basayet, basayamesh means illumines. Consciousness illumines all mental states as given above. All these things are illumined by what? The Chaitanyam consciousness, the Sakshi. So all these conditions of the mind are illumined and made known by the consciousness while itself remaining changeless. By its mere presence, it is like the light pervading the entire room. Whatever be the movement of the hand or the body or objects in the room, the light falls over the body and makes the body known or seen. The movement belongs to the body or the object, but the light itself does not move. The light cannot move also. What is movement? From a place you are to a place where you are not, that is movement or travel. But when light pervades the entire room, there is movement of the light. So light cannot move also because light is pervading the entire room. As the light pervades the entire room, consciousness, Atma pervades the entire creation. Similarly, consciousness spreads over the mind and illumines the conditions of the mind also. Thus, Chaitanyam, consciousness, Atma, called Chittihi here in this verse, is the seer number 3. And mind is the seer. Consciousness illumines without any movement, without by its seer will. It will not change anything. That consciousness is not. So now we will again go through the various properties of the consciousness, which we have mentioned many times in several of your, almost all our Vedanta classes. Consciousness is not a part, is not a product, is not a property of the mind. Consciousness is part, not a part of the mind, product of the mind, property of the mind. It's an independent entity that pervades and illumines the mind. It is not limited by the boundaries of the mind. It survives even in sleep when the mind is resolved. But consciousness in sleep is not available because the medium, the mind, is asleep and not because it is absent in sleep. So consciousness is very much present during sleep also, but the medium, the mind, is asleep. Thus, pure independent consciousness is the seer number 3. Pure independent absolute seer is consciousness, that is seer number 3. And what is the nature of this seer? this seer number three is unlike the other two seers. It is ever the seer and never the seen. It is ever the experiencer and never the experienced. One should never look for the experience of Atma. When we say that we do not have the experience of the Atma, we make the blunder of thinking that one day we will get the experience sometimes in future. And this indicates that we think that Atma is an object of our experience. And the author says that there is no such thing as the experience of Atma at all, because Atma is ever the experiencer. Atma is the self-evident experiencer. This is explained actually in the next verse we are going to see. Atma is our higher component, our superior nature. To use the language of the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Atma is called Paraprakriti. Apareyam itastvanyam prakritim vidyame param jiva bhuta mahabaho yedam dharyate jagate. It is Paraprakriti. So inferior energy, oh Arjuna, I have a superior energy. This is the jiva shakti, the soul energy, which comprises the embodied source, which are the basis of the life in the world. Krishna says very, very clearly, what is that superior form, superior energy, higher component. Let us go to shloka number 5. No deti nastametyesha na buddhim yati nakshayam swayam vibhatyatan yani Vasayet sadhanam vina vibhati swayam vibhatyatan yanim vasayet sadhanam vina. Here the author talks about the nature of consciousness. What was presented as the 5 features of consciousness earlier, not part property and all that, is beautifully summarized here. The consciousness, that is seer number 3, the absolute seer, does not rise nor is born. It does not have an origination or creation. Therefore, it does not end. Whatever has creation or origination or beginning only will end. It is never destroyed. Thus, consciousness is not limited by time. It is very important teaching because according to science, it's only a small diversion. I mentioned this in my other lectures also. According to science, consciousness is generated in matter at a particular time. According to science, consciousness is generated in matter at a particular time. For science, matter is fundamental. And as matter evolves and combines in a particular form, life originates. Science says that life or consciousness originated in time. But Vedanta says that what science talks of as origination of life is the origination of not chit, but chidabhasa, reflected consciousness. When matter forms in an ideal configuration, the reflected consciousness originates. When you polish the mirror, reflection happens. If the mirror is not polished, or if it is just like a rock, there is no reflection of the original light, even though light is there everywhere. So when the reflecting medium originates, the reflected consciousness originates. Original consciousness remains the same all the time. Science talks about the origination of reflected consciousness, whereas Vedanta talks about the eternity of the original consciousness. The original consciousness. So the original consciousness does not fall under the domain of science because the scientific instruments are not designed to study the original consciousness. They cannot also. Because original consciousness cannot be objectified. Original consciousness can be known only through the means of Shastra alone. Consciousness is prior to creation. We have to understand those things clearly in Vedanta. Consciousness is prior to creation. Consciousness is never destroyed. Actually, in the Maitreya Brahmanam or the Brahadaranyaka Upanishad, it is said that even if the whole creation is destroyed, only reflected consciousness, Chidabhasa alone will be destroyed, not the original consciousness. I should have remembered to put the shloka, I forgot. And in this important section of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, the original and the reflected consciousness are differentiated. Consciousness does not die. when the medium is destroyed. Consciousness does not expand or increase in size. It doesn't contract or decrease in size. So consciousness does not have dimension or size, unlike any object in space that is subject to expansion and contraction. This, all these theories that the universe is ever expanding, universe can, because it's inert matter, whereas it doesn't apply to Chaitanya, consciousness. Thus, consciousness is not limited by space. And this we have seen so far. What are the things so far we have seen? Just summarize. The sense organs are the seer number one, and mind is seer number two, and witness consciousness is seer number three, the absolute seer. So the first two are relative seers, because the sense organs are the seers with respect to the external world, but the seeing from the standpoint of mind. Since the sense organs are both the seer and the seen, they are called relative seers. Similarly, the mind is the seer from the standpoint of the sense organs, but it is the seen from the standpoint of the Sakshi Chaitanya. Thus, the mind plays a twofold role of the seer and the seen, and so it is also a relative seer. The Sakshi is never the seen, and it is ever the seer, and therefore Sakshi is the absolute seer. Thus, the author nicely introduced three seers and pointed out the Sakshi is the seerless seer of the absolute seer. Therefore, the author is defining the nature of this absolute seer in shloka number 5. Esha, esha, this consciousness, na udeti, does not rise. Na astam yeti, does not set also. Vridhim na yati na kshayam, does not rise or decay. No vriddhi, no kshaya. Swayam vibhati, it shines itself. Atha, on the other hand, vina sadhanam, without any aid, anyani vasayet, other objects, they illumine. Other objects, the sense organs are the mind, they illumine. Without any aid, they cannot. Whereas here, this Chaitanyam, it will illumine everything. The Sakshi, the absolute seer, is in the form of pure consciousness. It is that consciousness that does not have a beginning nor an end. Therefore, it is eternal consciousness. And from that itself, it is very clear that it does not have any connection with the body, because body has beginning and end. It is an independent entity. Consciousness, Atma, Sakshi, is an independent entity pervading and enlivening the body. Not only it does not have birth or death, it does not have expansion or contraction, meaning that it is formless and all-pervading. Consciousness is time-wise limitless and space-wise also limitless. Consciousness is ever the seer and is never illumined by anything, because it is self-luminous. Moon has to be illumined by sun because it doesn't have light of its own. But sun does not need illumination by anything because it is self-shining. Similarly, the Sakshi is self-evident, self-luminous. Therefore, we need not work for the experience of the Sakshi. It is ever experienced. I don't have to look for a Sakshi experience separately. The very fact I speak to you, everything we do, we experience it every moment. If there is no experience of the Sakshi at any particular time, then it will not be self-luminous, and so it will have to be illumined by something else. So being self-luminous, it is self-shining, and so it is ever experienced. Thus, consciousness does not require any special effort to be experienced. I don't have to go to Nirvikalpaka Samadhi, all those things I don't have to go to experience consciousness. It is ever experienced. Not only it is self-shining, it illumines all the other things also without requiring instruments, any instruments for illumination. Whereas the mind and the sense organs, mind can illumine anything only with the help of a thought. Mind can illumine anything only with the help of a thought. For the mind to perceive any object, the thought of the object has to be formed. The mind requires an instrument, but Sakshi does not require an instrument or called thought to illumine any object. Sakshi does not require sense organs to illumine the object, the mind. and it does not require an action to illumine the mind also. It illumines by its mere presence. The mere presence of the Atma illumines everything. Actually, here the verb illumines may be taken to mean that Sakshi is doing an action of illumination at a particular time and not at other times. People might misconceive these kind of facts. That is not correct. Here, illumination is not an action. Mind becomes alive in the mere presence of Sakshi. Mind becomes enlivened, sentient in the mere presence of Sakshi. Sakshi illumines not by will or desire or plan or action, by its mere presence. Sakshi just is. It is. And in its presence, the mind becomes alive and sentient. Sakshi simply is. When it is in its presence, everything is enlivened and becomes sentient. That is figuratively called as Sakshi illumine. So we should not think illumination is an action done by the Sakshi Atma, consciousness. The Sakshi does not undergo any modification also by illumining. By illumining something, whether the power of Sakshi will it decrease? No. It will never become a fused bulb or a bulb losing its power after some time. Without undergoing any change or having any will or desire, Sakshi, by its mere presence, becomes within course the seer of the mind without requiring any other instrument like microscope or whatever it is. So this particular group of five verses, they talked about the essence of these two seers, the relative seers, and one absolute seer, namely the Chaitanyam or the Atma. And we will continue with the next topic in the next class. Yo vedadau swara prokto vedante cha pratishtitaha tasya prakritilinasya yaparasa maheshwaraha Sri Krishna arpanamastu Narayana.